This is The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega, and we begin today with the family separation crisis and its ongoing impact on the children. In just a moment, we'll look at ProPublica's investigation into allegations of sexual abuse at immigration detention centers housing children. But we begin at the Shiloh Treatment Center in Manville, Texas. According to federal court documents filed in late April of this year, migrant children were forcibly injected with psychiatric drugs at the detention facility, which is south of Houston, without their consent. And on Monday, a federal judge intervened, ordering the government to stop drugging migrant children without proper consent. U.S. District Judge Dolly G. in Los Angeles also ruled that the children housed at Shiloh be moved into less restrictive housing, except for those deemed by licensed professionals to pose, quote, a risk of harm to themselves or others. Aura Bogado is an immigration reporter for Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting, who helped break the story of abuse at the Shiloh Treatment Center. Aura, thanks for being with us.
Hi, Tanzina. Thank you for having me.
So let's take a step back and tell us a little bit about the Shiloh Treatment Facility. How long has it been around? And is this practice of administering drugs, did that start before the current migrant crisis? Or is that something that was implemented when these children arrived?
Shiloh's been around for a while, but it started housing unaccompanied minors in 2013. And that entire time, yes, it has drugged the unaccompanied minors that have been in its care.
And what type of drugs are we talking about? And how do they make the decision to drug these children? Are they psychotropic? Are they physical? You know, for ailments? What are we talking about here?
They're really, really heavy drugs. They're psychotropic drugs that are prescribed for people who are dealing with pretty serious mental health issues. We also know that sometimes children are prescribed other drugs that are used for Parkinson's patients, for example, have sometimes been administered at Shiloh. And in the case of Shiloh, there is a psychiatrist on site. We recently broke the story that psychiatrist, that Dr. Javier Ruiz, had in fact lost his certification for child and adolescent psychiatry. So although his license remained intact, he lost the certification to treat children and adolescents, which is what Shiloh houses. And he was the one who was prescribing the drugs. The way that the children wound up there is that they were in a shelter like the regular shelters that we've been hearing a lot about, and they were stepped up, the processes stepped up in the system that they're in, which is the Office of Refugee Resettlement under Health and Human Services. So ORR finds something in their behavior, whether it's heavy crying, depression. There was one child who had heard that his mom became very, very sick back home in Guatemala, and so he peed in his pants. And depending on the determination that ORR makes, they are then placed within a place like Shiloh.
And is it fair to say, you know, to a certain extent, these are children, as you described, who are essentially experiencing trauma, whether that's from coming across the way they came to the United States, what they encountered when they got to the United States. So is it possible to say that the folks who are administrating these drugs are doing it to help these children?
That's ostensibly the case, and I don't doubt that some drug may have helped some child, but overwhelmingly what we know from court records and also from families that I've spoken with, they say that the drugs are used in order to control children's behavior to the point of being just completely silenced and under control. And children also say that sometimes they don't want to take the drugs because they don't like the way that the drugs make them feel, and they've been forcibly held down and injected. It's important also to keep in mind that Shiloh, before Shiloh existed, it had a different name, Daystar. There are three deaths that are associated with the same sort of entity that runs Daystar and Shiloh. Although none of the children who died there were unaccompanied minors, it does sort of bring into question the safety of any child there.
Let's also, you actually spoke to a young boy and his mother. Her name is Maribel. The boy was in Shiloh from November of last year to April of this year. And according to medical records that you were able to access during his time there, he was given drugs without his mother's consent. And this is, again, at the Shiloh Center. So let's take a listen to what his mother, Maribel, had to tell you.
Nunca autoricé, es más.
I never authorized it. In fact, when I found out he was so sleepy, like hypnotized, inarticulate, I called and I asked his staff person if they could take away that medication. And she told me, no, no one can take away that medication because it has been prescribed by the doctor and that my child needed it. And I asked her, can I not, as the mother, decide for my child not to be giving all the medication? And she said that no one could discontinue the medication, only the doctor. She said it just like that.
Ahora, tell us about Maribel and her son.
Maribel was already in the United States. She was living in New Orleans. Her son, for a variety of reasons, really wanted to be with her. They were both originally from Honduras. He came to the United States with his cousin, and him and his cousin were separated at the border last year in 2017. And he was in a shelter and really wanted to run away and be with his mom, as children tend to want to do. And because of that and some other behaviors, he was then referred to a psychiatrist within the ORR system. That psychiatrist deemed that he should be placed under certain medication, and Maribel's son wound up at Shiloh. The entire time that this was happening, the government knew exactly where Maribel was. They knew that because she is in the system. She is actively seeking asylum right now and has an open case. And they did not hand him over to her. And once he went in there, she just describes a really big shift in the way that he was communicating with her. She would sometimes video chat with him through WhatsApp. And she noticed that he just looked sometimes very, very, very tired. She describes him as lethargic, and she really just wanted him out, and for nearly 6 months, they refused to do so.
Now, there has been some movement on this case, and since your reporting, we've seen, for example, Monday of this week, a federal judge intervened and ordered the government to stop drugging immigrant children without proper consent. What exactly entails consent? Consent from whom? Parents who may or may not be available?
Yeah, this is a really good question. I think that this ruling, probably some parts of it are still going to be have to be hammered out. They are technically in the care and custody of ORR. And a lot of times the children do have parents or a potential sponsor that hasn't yet fully been vetted by ORR's system. So we'll see who that means. It may mean the child themselves, but sometimes the child is very, very young. In the case of Maribel's son, for example, he was only 9 years old when he was there. So what does consent look like? The ruling also says that the children need to be taken out of there unless they pose a risk of harm to themselves or others. And I know from Twitter, some people were saying, well, they're all a risk. That's why they're there. That's not necessarily the case. Again, they're referred there for a whole bunch of different reasons, and it doesn't always have to do with the fact that they may harm themselves. It just has to do with the fact that they may be depressed. And again, these are children, as you pointed out, that are often dealing with very, very, very heavy trauma. They're leaving a situation in their home countries where they have sometimes witnessed horrific things, children who have seen massacres, children whose lives have been threatened. They, through a miracle, sometimes find their way to the border and then talk about essentially being re-traumatized in places like Shiloh.
Aura Abogado is an immigration reporter for Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting. Aura, thank you so much.
Thank you, Tanzina.
allegations of drugging in migrant detention centers are emerging alongside stories of sexual abuse. Just this week, an employee at a Southwest Key facility in Phoenix was arrested for alleged sexual abuse, child molestation, and aggravated assault of a 14-year-old girl being detained at the center. Now, a new investigation by ProPublica attempts to chronicle these reports of abuse. Reporters Michael Grable and Topher Sanders obtained police reports and call logs dating back to 2014 from more than two-thirds of the shelters housing immigrant children. I spoke with Topher Sanders about what they found.
There were 126 call logs that reflected some type of sexual offense. That number is looking at just the documents that we can tie directly to unaccompanied children. That number could be as high as 300 plus when you look at the facilities that take care of a hybrid of children that are in general foster care from the United States, and they also have beds for people who are unaccompanied. Texas houses the majority of these children, and many of the records that would tell the full picture reside in Texas, and we haven't gotten those records yet.
Runaways and sexual abuse, like, is this something that happens at these facilities systemically? Is this something that children who are placed in these facilities, whether they're migrant children or not migrant children, are exposed to?
Yeah, that's a great question. We heard it from a lot of people as it relates to, well, isn't this just like foster care? Isn't that the analogy you would make? And in foster care, aren't there kind of horrible things that happen? And there's a little bit of truth to that. Yes, they are analogous to foster care. It's essentially the type of system they set up to house these young people. But they also bring the added challenges and complexity of being children who are in a completely new environment. They're housed with people that speak different languages or from different countries. In some instances, there's no adult staff member at these facilities that even speak the dialect of some of these children. And what the experts and psychologists tell us is that because of these circumstances, because the children are weighing whether or not speaking up will jeopardize their opportunity to remain in this country, this group of children are far less likely to voice any abuse that they experience or to tell an adult that, hey, I saw this happening to my friend and my roommate. That's less likely to happen with this group of children.
So, Topher, let me ask you. On Tuesday, during a Senate judiciary hearing, Senator Rich Blumenthal, who's the Democrat from Connecticut, pose these questions to a panel of Trump administration officials.
Let me ask this panel, who here thinks that zero tolerance has been a success? You can just raise your hand if you think it's been a success. Who thinks that the family separation policy has been a success? Raise your hand.
None of the witnesses raised their hands. And in your opinion, does this administration and do members of Congress really understand or care about the ramifications of this process ultimately?
I think you kind of have to assess, as a voter, assess the actions of your lawmakers to make that determination for yourself. But we did hear from lawmakers that were alarmed by what we found, which indicated they did not know and had not been told by anybody what the kind of sum total of this world looks like. And again, we only have a fraction of that we've reported. We have more to report and a fuller picture still out there to be learned.
Topher Sanders, reporter for ProPublica, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.